Welcome to the Better and Longer podcast. In today's episode, we're featuring our new series, Roots of Resilience, Empowering Kinship Families Amid Opioid Recovery. This series is made possible by the One Ohio Recovery Foundation. In this podcast, we uplift families, caregivers, and communities who are navigating life's toughest seasons with courage and hope. I'm Arcelia Armstrong, Director of the Caregiver Support and Kinship Navigator Programs at the Area Office on Aging of Northwestern Ohio Incorporated.
And I'm Marcia Rose, the Supervisor of the Area Office on Aging Kinship Navigator Program. And together we are honored to create a space for honest conversations that promote healing, connection, and resilience.
In today's episode, we'll be talking about how families and children due to substance use challenges can find support, stability, and strength, even in uncertainty. Before we dive deeper, let's look at the scale of what we're talking about. Nationally, about 2.5 million children are living in kinship care, mostly with grandparents or other relatives, and nearly 40% of those children ended up in these homes because parents struggle with substance use disorders, including opioid addiction. That's almost double what it was 20 years ago. But it's not just national numbers. Here in Ohio, kinship placements in child welfare system have nearly doubled in the last decade, reflecting the enormous strain opioid misuse places on families. And in our own Lucas County, data shows there were close to 159 opioid-related overdose deaths in 2024, with fentanyl involved in roughly 88% of them, a stark reminder of the local impact on parents and caregivers alike. These statistics underscore why mental health and caregiver support are not just important, they're essential. Research consistently shows that kinship caregivers report high levels of stress and mental health strain, and children in these circumstances often need emotional and behavioral health resources.
And today we're joined by a very special guest, a community partner, Mariah Cornoa. She's the executive director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, of Greater Toledo. And NAMI does provide education, advocacy, and support for individuals and those families impacted by mental health and substance use challenges.
Thank you so much for being with us today. We're grateful for the work you do in our community.
Thanks for having me. I'm so glad to see both of you.
Before we get started, we want to share a gentle content notice. Today's conversation does include discussion of substance use, recovery, family separation, and trauma. We approach these topics with care and respect. If at any point you need to pause or step away, please do what feels best for you. If you or someone you love needs support, we encourage reaching out to local resources or calling 988 for the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. You are not alone.
To start, can you share a little about NAMI Toledo and the mission that guides your work?
I am happy to. Thank you for asking. So NAMI is the National Alliance for Mental Illness, and we are around really three pillars of education, support, and advocacy. And what we do with that is we offer education classes for families impacted by mental illness, as well as for peers. We have support groups, almost nine of them going right now. We also have advocacy that happens on a one-to-one basis, so family navigation. When you're not sure where to go next, you can always call NAMI and we will help really just navigate these complex systems. We also do that at a legislative level. How do we give people voice so that people can really help us destigmatize mental illness? There is still so much barriers and resistance and issues around access that we still need to address when it comes to mental illness. So NAMI's role is really those three pillars: education, support, and advocacy, and really grounded in earliest interventions, best possible care, and diversion from the criminal justice system. So we really try to keep those things in mind as we provide support. And this is an important distinction with NAMI. NAMI doesn't do direct treatment. We are what supports and makes treatment most impactful is when it is surrounded with support. And half of what our challenges come back to is, again, that stigma and getting people the courage to ask for help early and to know where to go. So we have a motto, know us before you need us. But the other big piece of this is we can't do it alone. We need our partners and everyone playing a role in mental health.
That is so true. So prior to going to live with kinship caregivers, just a few quick facts. 28% of children in kinship care have experienced neglect. 26% of children have experienced parental substance use or abuse, known as substance use disorders, and 11% of children have experienced physical abuse. In our program, the Area Office on Aging Kinship Navigator supports grandparents and relatives, caregivers living in Lucas County who are raising children when the biological parents are unable or unwilling to do so. The Area Office on Aging Kinship Navigator program is globally and nationally recognized and is designated as an exemplary kinship navigator program by the Grand Families and Kinship Support Network, which is a national technical assistance center. From what you see in our community, how does the opioid crisis impact families, especially those grandparents and relatives and kinship caregivers stepping up to care for children?
Oh, well, the numbers alone are staggering, and this is a very prevalent issue in our community. I think what happens is there's so many conflicting needs and priorities in our life that when it comes to substance use, often those things happen from legitimate causes. I had an injury, and so I think, one, encouraging early interventions are really important. But also recognizing that the caregivers that are stepping up into these roles, what they are also carrying. And it's been an honor to work with both of you for almost 15 years in this space. And what is so impactful for me to witness as a supporter is that these families keep showing up to learn how to do better for their loved ones and are really trying to just apply some of these things to give better hope and future for the kids and the folks in their care. What I think is really special about them too is this all happens simultaneously while they're dealing with their own grief, their own mental health, their own financial concerns. There's so much happening from all of the impacts that the social determinants of health or just impacts of trauma alone that how can we wrap these caregivers in support so that, one, they're encouraged to ask for help when they need it, but also to help. There's so much guilt and shame that goes along with mental health and addiction that if we don't give them options or, again, just a listening ear, sometimes that's the most important thing that we do at NAMI is just listen. People feel invisible. Their voice doesn't matter and nobody cares. And it's not true. It's not true at all. So how do we give them experiences and opportunities to wrap themselves in that community support?
Many kinship caregivers suddenly find themselves navigating schools, healthcare systems, courts, and emotional trauma, often without preparation. What are some common challenges you see families facing?
Oh my gosh, well, what all you just named is overwhelming, right? And if you've never had experience and exposure to these systems, it's often traumatizing to have to keep telling your story and then go to the next provider and I have to retell my entire story. So I think, one, the power of a warm transfer is really helpful amongst providers and partners. How do we collaborate on behalf of these families? But also the burnout and the compassion fatigue they're doing for everybody else. And again, making 10 calls to navigate these complex systems, how can we share the load? And you said something really important earlier, Marcia, just that we reiterate, you are not alone in this journey. And what can I do for you? And also, I think what the Kinship Navigator program has done over the years is made space for caregiver self-care and wellness. And that's something that at the end of everything else I have to do today, and now you want me to do something else for myself, there's still stigma, there's still permission that they need to give themselves, and a lot of self-care that needs to happen.
That is so true. And you did address this a bit in your response, but, you know, as kinship families are dealing with many different facets in their life that propose challenges or barriers, what kind of things do you think help them to stay resilient through those transitions?
Okay, so I love that word resilient. What does resilience mean? It means the ability to bounce back. What are you bouncing back to if you don't belong somewhere? And so I think the power of community and what the Kinship Navigator program does is so bottom line critical to resilience, is providing safe spaces for them to come together, to recognize others are in the same, you know, situations that I'm in. Here's what they've done. How can I learn from them? But also the impact of people caring is so powerful, and they're doing so much for the loved ones in their lives. For someone to take care of them, I think, is really important, and I thank you for that.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Mariah. We couldn't do it without you. It's definitely a community. It takes a community. Recovery is not just an individual journey. It affects the entire family system. How can families support a loved one in recovery while also protecting their own well-being?
Ooh, good question. Stay open and learn. There are lots of supports because, again, if you've not needed this, you don't necessarily know all of the pitfalls of the journey involved with recovery. Recovery doesn't happen overnight. Mental illness, addiction, a lot of times these are lifelong conditions that they have to respond to and prepare for. What I want to remind people is that, one, treatment works, which is really encouraging. And it doesn't happen, again, overnight or in a short period of time. But when you commit to the treatment process and then engage and stay open to the learning process that supports treatment efficacy is support groups. I think support groups are extremely helpful to share lessons learned, normalize some of these struggles, and not to minimize the impacts of it. We're not normalizing this so that it is taken for granted. But how do we normalize asking for help, intervening early? I think there is so much space for upstream supports in the workplace. How do we make wellness something that we embrace and talk about? So physical health, mental health, same thing, right? And so I think what helps families be successful in recognizing the journey of recovery is support groups and education classes, because the more you know, the better you can respond to it. And the other piece, I think, with mental illness and addiction is that we often look at it as right and wrong. And there's so many complexities to that. And again, ups and downs in that process. So how do we give grace to ourselves and maybe not having all the answers all the time, and also grace with others? So I think a lot of that comes from how we make safe space to talk about it and then share our own experiences. I think that's one of the things that we see as a path forward is, if I feel invisible, nobody cares, how do we give them their opportunity and their voice? And we have some programs at NAMI. It's called In Our Own Voice and Sharing Your Story with Law Enforcement. And it's really just a platform for a template for how to tell your story. We also offer a NAMI Smarts. It's the same thing, but applied to policy work. So as I keep going, the point is brevity. Get to it. And often in the legislative space, we only get 5-10 minutes with a legislator. So what's your story?
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the children in kinship care for a minute. These children may have experienced loss, instability, trauma. What signs should caregivers watch for, and how can they support emotional healing for the children?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. And I think what happens is recognizing changes that happen in our children, we often will say that's adolescence. That's they're just part of growing up, part of right. aging. So I think it's really to watch for what is dramatic and what is a definite difference from what they're used to. But I also think what's really important is to slow down and be present for one another and to really listen. Our children are telling us how they feel. We just sometimes are so busy that we skip right by it. Or we minimize because, yeah, me too, kid, right? And we're still trying to deal with our own needs that we're sort of pushing theirs aside. So I think honoring what they need, listening to them and being present with them, and then recognizing when there are some big dramatic changes. If you have an involved child that's no longer involved in things, that's a change. If you have a child that shows up eager and now doesn't care, again, these are all things that are different in their personality. Now, are hormones in puberty real? Yep. But I think also giving them safe outlets to talk about it. I think there are great partners and that do great wellness for youth, too. I think we have a program called Creative Expressions, mm-hmm. and it's a really neutral way to talk about emotions while coloring, talk about emotions while, expressing ourselves in our own unique ways. So I think... again, our kids, we put a lot of pressure on them to know how to regulate, and we're not necessarily modeling that ourselves. So giving them their grace, too.
Stigma still creates barriers to seeking help. How can families move past shame and feel empowered to ask for support?
I don't know. Start with that sentence all over again, right? Stigma is real, and I think we have to talk about that. One of my sort of jokes when I start a lot of talks is, I have depression and anxiety, I see a therapist, and I have a general practitioner too. Like, I mean, physical health is the same thing as mental health. Why are we still shying away from talking about it? So I think we have to continue to create spaces like this where we can talk about the normalcy and the reality that we have different numbers out there, 1 in 4, 1 in 5, I say, five and five are impacted though, right? We all, whether it's us dealing with a serious and persistent mental illness or an everyday challenge with our mental health, it's out there and we can no longer deny its existence. So I think more spaces where we can be honest, open, and frank about it. But also the part about it's okay to not be okay. It's all right to... I think we should have a little baby on the back of these T-shirts that say it's okay to not be okay, but you wouldn't let a baby sit in it. Why don't we intervene earlier when we see people struggling? I'm afraid I'm going to make it worse. I don't know what to say. And I think it's okay to fumble through that. And you said something early that I think is really important to keep plugging is 988. I don't have to have the answers. We can text together. Right? I don't know what to say here, but I'm worried about you. How about we text together, right? So instead of waiting or letting it be somebody else's job or problem to intervene, what can we do to say it's okay not be okay? And even model, I'm not always okay. And that's okay, right? So I think a lot of that is just creating this safe space to continue to talk about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mariah, can you share some examples of NAMI programs or community partnerships that you have which support families who are impacted by substance use and mental health challenges, like the Creative Expressions program you mentioned?
Sure. So just yesterday, I think it was yesterday.
Yes.
We worked with Kinship Navigator
yes.
To make sure that we had just some information on NAMI services, and what it became was mm-hmm. more intimate than that. We see that people are needing help right then and there. And so how do we, again, create space for that? Mm-hmm. So I expect that to happen again, right? Because
yes.
it's clearly needed. Other partnerships that have been wonderful. First of all, we have our NAMI Walks event coming up this Saturday, whenever this airs. It'll have taken place May 16th. It is our National Day of Hope. And what is so powerful and beautiful about that day is seeing people show up in force mm-hmm. in support of one another. That's our biggest advocacy event and our opportunity to destigmatize mental health and the power of showing up for one another. We have worked with the Metro Parks on this. We have some other partnerships that have been beautiful, the Alzheimer's Association. As partners in this space, this is heavy work. Yeah. So how do we support one another and work smarter, not harder? So the Alzheimer's did their walk at Glass City Metro, and we all went as a team, learned from them. They came, shared so many lessons learned that we are able to go into this event at a new venue, feeling really confident and avoiding some of the same pitfalls that others may have fallen into. The point is none of this can happen in silos or one organization set up to fix it all. We can't. We have to come together in collaboration and in support to really, I think, challenge, change, and the environment we're in. As our funder, the Mental Health and Recovery Services Board, they have been phenomenal in trying to connect all of these pieces and dots. We have our Local Help Now app where, again, it's only as good as the community that updates it and accesses it, right? So we want to make sure people know there's these systems in place, and you don't have to know where to go next. You can just call NAMI and really go from there.
Wonderful. You're just a wealth of resources. Thank you so much, Mariah. What practical steps can a kinship caregiver take if they're feeling overwhelmed or isolated?
Call. Ask for help first, right? And I think you guys do a really good job at staying networked with each other, and I think that's really important. I think also one of the most valuable tools in my own toolbox is sleep. Rest is important, and rest is essential every single day. Simple things. I think we put self-care out of reach, and we need to make it obtainable and things that we do every day, like drinking our water, standing up, going for a walk, get outside and breathe some fresh air. Just take a breath. Even in my own mental health journey, I beat myself up that I didn't know how to do breathing right. It's a natural thing that we should be comfortable doing. And so I always remind people, just one breath in this one moment is mindfulness. And you need to take a moment for yourself and come back into your body, right? We let the emotions and the moment take over often. So how do we come back in ourselves is, I think, those moments of mindfulness, breathing, water, friends, it matters.
Thank you.
All those ways we can calm our nervous system down, yeah. You know, because we're always living up here.
Right.
Yeah. Those are great suggestions. So for our listeners, if someone's listening today and unsure of where to begin, what is one small step that they can take towards support or healing?
I would say call NAMI, honestly, because there are ways to normalize the struggle. Everybody is feeling the struggle right now. And whether it's accessing the programs themselves or becoming a volunteer, sometimes there is so much purpose missing. We just don't feel connected to one another. So volunteering, I think, is so extremely valuable. And that can happen on an ongoing basis. That can happen on a one-time basis. But I think connection and healing happens within community.
So true.
Yeah.
True. As we close, what message would you like kinship caregivers to hear today?
I just want to reiterate what Marcia already said, is you're not alone. And thank you. I don't think that in the quest of doing for everybody, we hear thank you enough. And so I will say thank you to them because what they do is not easy, and they're doing it. So please continue to access supports and also feel empowered to ask for help because we're here for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
If you are a grandparent or kinship caregiver raising a relative's child, we encourage you to contact the Kinship Navigator Program at the Area Office on Aging of Northwestern Ohio. You can call us at 419-382-0624 or visit our website, www.areaofficeonaging.com, to get connected with supportive services. Through the Kinship Navigator Program, you can access information, individualized assistance, and ongoing support, and also have access to several evidence-based programs, such as Guiding Good Choices, the Child Traumatic Stress Workshops, and the WISE Wellness Initiative for Senior Education. You'll also receive valuable publications, including our Parenting Smarts Resource Guide and our new Empowering Kinship Families Resources for Opioid Recovery and Prevention booklet. Additional benefits, we do have a twice monthly electronic newsletter. We also have a quarterly print newsletter, support groups, special events, and the opportunity to catch up on previous episodes of Roots of Resilience podcast, where listeners can learn more about NAMI Toledo and connect with services. So, Mariah, where can people contact NAMI Toledo and learn more?
Sure. We have a website, www.namitoledo.org. So it's namitoledo.org. Or you can call us at 419-243-1119.
Thank you again for your leadership and commitment to families in our community.
And thank you to our listeners for joining us on Roots of Resilience. If today's conversation resonated with you, please share this episode with someone who may benefit. Stay grounded, stay hopeful, and keep nurturing your roots of resilience.
Remember, healing happens in connection, and support is always within reach. Welcome to the Better and Longer podcast. In today's episode, we're featuring our new series, Roots of Resilience, Empowering Kinship Families Amid Opioid Recovery. This series is made possible by the One Ohio Recovery Foundation.
In this podcast, we uplift families, caregivers, and communities who are navigating life's toughest seasons with courage and hope. I'm Marcia Rose, supervisor of the Kinship Navigator Program at the Area Office on Aging of Northwestern Ohio.
And I'm Ursulia Armstrong, Director of the Caregiver Support and Kinship Navigator Programs at the Area Office on Aging of Northwestern Ohio Incorporated. Today, we're talking about how mental health support strengthens families, stabilizes children, and promotes healing across generations, especially in the face of the opioid epidemic.
In today's episode, we'll be talking about how families caring for children due to substance use challenges can find support, stability, and strength, even in uncertainty. Before we take a deeper dive, let's look at the scale of what we're talking about here. Nationally, nearly 1 in 5 adults experience a mental health condition each year, and substance use disorders frequently overlap with those challenges. In our local system, we serve thousands of residents annually through prevention, treatment, and recovery support. When we strengthen access to care, we're not just helping individuals, we're stabilizing the entire family system.
We're honored to be joined by Scott Silent, the Executive Director of the Mental Health and Recovery Services Board of Lucas County. Mental Health Recovery Services Board of Lucas County is dedicated to supporting behavioral health and addiction recovery for residents of Lucas County, Ohio. Its main role isn't to provide direct clinical services itself, but to plan, fund, coordinate, and monitor a network of local providers that deliver mental health, addiction, crisis, prevention, and recovery supports in the community. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with a local snapshot. According to the 2022-2023 Lucas County Community Health Assessment, 11% of local youth in 6th through 12th grade have seriously considered suicide in the past year, and 8% have attempted suicide. Among adults in the county, 4% seriously considered attempting suicide over the same period. Those are sobering numbers.
Before we continue, we want to share a gentle content notice. Today's conversation includes discussion of substance use, recovery, family separation, and trauma. We approach these topics with care and respect. If at any point you need to pause or step away, please do what feels best for you. If you or someone you love needs support, we encourage reaching out to local resources or calling 988 for the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. You are not alone.
We know that stress, trauma, and unmet mental health needs intersect with substance use challenges, which have seriously affected families here in Lucas County. In 2024, the Lucas County Health Department reported 159 opioid-related overdose deaths, and fentanyl was involved in approximately 88% of those cases. Can you tell us more about these statistics and kind of frame that for us?
Sure. I think, you know, these statistics are, you know, they really do frame the urgency of what we're trying to do here. You know, one of the most important things that we understand is that behavioral health challenges in our community rarely just affect one person, right? The entire family struggles with addiction, untreated traumas, depression, anxiety, and that impact ripples across the family systems, but especially when children and older adult caregivers who often stepped in during a crisis. You know, these numbers represent, you know, they're just heartbreaking, right? I mean, you know, behind every statistic, there's a family member experiencing instability, grief, trauma. We know from decades of research that adverse childhood experiences, you know, what people call ACEs, you know, they can significantly impact or increase the risk of a long-term behavioral health problems, you know, chronic disease, school difficulties, and future substance use if we don't intervene early. That's why at the board and our network of providers, we simply, you know, simply responding to emergencies is just part of the answer. Prevention, early intervention, crisis response, treatment, recovery supports, peer supports, housing stabilities, family-centered services. Those are the things that we are very intentional about in our community creating so that we build a full comprehensive system of care.
Thank you, Scott. To ground listeners, can you maybe explain a little bit more about what your board does locally?
Sure. It's one of my favorite things to talk about. So, you know, the Mental Health Recovery Services Board serves as our local behavioral health authority in our community. The board is actually made up of 18 Lucas County residents. And most of those trustees actually have involvement with our system. A loved one who has behavioral health challenges has experienced our services and our systems. So they are entirely vested in this process. You know, we don't provide direct clinical services, as you've already stated once, but we plan out a system of care using experienced, qualified, and licensed providers to provide those services across Lucas County. That includes organizations that provide mental health services, substance use services, prevention programming, recovery supports, crisis, housing, peer and youth intervention. So it is quite a lot that we have oversight of. You know, the other thing we do is we help organizations coordinate major community initiatives and collaborate with organizations such as the Area Office on Aging, for instance. Also, I think probably at this point, it's good to mention that I am a trustee on the One Ohio Recovery Board. That's another way of collaborating and developing resources in our community, which directly funded this project, I believe. So,
yes.
Yeah. So we're looking at how do we make services accessible to everyone in our community that needs it? Now, we are a safety net, you know, so for, you know, those that go without, that's why we're here. But we also recognize that mental health and substance use issues do not discriminate on race, gender, age, ethnicity. It's equally distributed across all populations, and so we need to have accessibility options for everyone in our community.
Now let's talk about how the opioid crisis has affected families here in Lucas County. We know that 44% of children in foster care placements in Lucas County are living with kinship caregivers, those relatives, grandparents, aunts, and uncles taking children into their homes when the parents struggle with substance use.
That means almost half of kids who need safe homes right now are being raised by family members, often without the training or support that adoptive parents might receive.
You know, And that really in and of itself brings on these unique stressors that we're here to talk a little bit about, right? Kinship care navigators step into parenting roles unexpectedly during periods of significant family crisis. Many grandparents, relatives, they didn't anticipate raising children again later in life, right? And then suddenly they're managing school systems, behavioral health needs, financial pressures, legal issues, and traumas related to all these behaviors. I think that's what makes it especially challenging for many caregivers. They're also coping with their own grief, their own anxiety, their exhaustion to stabilize, to support children. These individuals, the children, they've experienced some pretty significant traumas themselves. And these caregivers, kinship navigators, they need support. Research shows us that children who are exposed to trauma benefit from stable, supporting, nurturing environments and relationships with trusted adults. These kinship care navigators often become that protective factor. So we need to support them. We can't expect families to carry out this burden alone. And, respite opportunities, mental health supports, peer supports, navigation services, those are all the things that our community is working towards.
Yeah, that's so true. And the kids themselves, they might have experienced that instability, exposure to addiction, separation or loss of the biological parent, and all of which can create that long-term emotional challenges and behavioral health challenges.
Even as needs grow, access to mental health care remains challenging, especially for children and families. Across Ohio, most counties are experiencing shortages in child and adolescent mental health professionals, at times leaving far too few clinicians to meet community demand.
Scott, your board has been working to expand access through funding. Can you highlight some of the key initiatives that are helping families here locally?
Absolutely. One of our biggest priorities in Lucas County has been improving access points into care because families often struggle to navigate a fairly complex system, where they're already overwhelmed. So we've expanded our crisis services so that families have more options beside just an emergency room or a law enforcement involvement. That includes crisis hotlines, mobile response, psychiatric urgent cares, and stabilization services designed to intervene earlier in the psychiatric crisis rather than later when, you might have to get law enforcement involved. So, when I say those things, it's, places like Zeph's Mobile Response and Stabilization Services that's funded through the state of Ohio, that is a family-defined crisis model where the family can identify their own crisis. It doesn't necessarily have to be a psychiatric crisis in and of itself. It can be a crisis that is adding to the stress and anxiety in the family that needs to be mitigated prior to an explosive event. So we have that program. We have a crisis stabilization unit for child and adolescents and adults. We have a safety net, which Zeph runs. It's an emergency center for emergency shelter for youth. But we also recognize that, those elements alone sometimes aren't enough. And you may need to call an organization, a law enforcement organization. And that while then we don't want that to be the first option, and we never want it to be the first option, but we need to train law enforcement officers on how to deal with emergencies, psychiatric emergencies in our community. So we have a great deal of energy and effort dealing with what we call crisis intervention team training. And that's to train law enforcement officers to recognize a crisis event in a family and then tips and techniques to de-escalate and information on how to support that family moving to services as opposed to arrest. Those are on the crisis side. a great deal of our energy and efforts is also on prevention and early intervention programs. You know, they consistently show that the earlier we get somebody into services, the better the long-term outcomes. So we have a significant number of prevention programs throughout our community. Sophia Quintero Center, the Believe Center, Center of Hope Family Services, Harbor's WISE program for older adults, UMIDOP, Unison, and then there's a few others that are sprinkled out. In addition, we never want to discount the power of peers. Individuals that have lived through that process can engage families in ways that traditional systems just can't do, right? Peer supports help reduce isolation, increase trust, engagement, give people hope. And, we do that through NAMI Toledo. You probably have talked a little bit about that through their Family Navigator program, Family to Family program, and across our systems. And then beyond that, no one organization can do it separately, right?
Right.
Area Office on Aging, Child Protection Services, our healthcare providers, our schools, all community organizations. You know, the Mental Health Board in and of itself can't do this work. It's too great. You referenced many people in Lucas County are receiving services or need services. And what we know is that well over 30 to 40,000 individuals in Lucas County receive a behavioral health service in a given year. So think about that. That's almost one in 10 Lucas County residents. It takes a system. It takes a community. It takes everyone to be diligent in their mental health issues.
Thank you, Scott. Yeah, very important work. And again, like you said, we could not do it without the support of you and all the partners. In the Mental Health Recovery Services Board, it's not just about treatment, as you've mentioned, but education and advocacy too. How do these efforts help reduce stigma?
So, you know, I think during the pandemic, mental health issues came to light at a greater rate than many others, and really went a long way in reducing stigma. But we are nowhere close to, ending that fight on stigma. So, education and advocacy efforts are a key component of what we do. We know that stigma is one of the barriers to accessing care. Many families delay seeking care because they fear judgment, embarrassment, or being blamed for something that they're experiencing. Education helps normalize these behaviors, right? We have mental health first aid. We have question, persuade, and refer QPR trainings in our communities. We help our community understand and how to productively engage individuals who are experiencing behavioral health concerns. The other thing is we coordinate community conversations. We have a very active community engagement team that is in many health fairs and programs like this and community events to just normalize the discussion around mental health services so that people understand that it's just as important to address your mental health concerns as it is your physical health concerns.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think that visibility through that outreach is so important to connect with the community.
Yeah, definitely. If you are a grandparent or kinship caregiver raising a relative's child, we encourage you to contact the Kinship Navigator program at the Area Office on Aging of Northwestern Ohio. You can call 419-382-0624 or visit us at areaofficeonaging.com to get connected with supportive services. Through our program, you can access information, individualized assistance, and ongoing support, as well as evidence-based programs such as Guiding Good Choices, Child Traumatic Stress Workshops, and the WISE Wellness Initiative for Senior Education classes that Scott just mentioned. You will also receive valuable publications, including our Parenting Smarts Resource Guide, 11th edition, and our Empowering Kinship Families resources for opioid recovery and prevention booklet. Additional benefits include a twice monthly electronic newsletter, quarterly kinship support groups, special events, and the opportunity to catch up on previous episodes of Roots of Resilience. And Scott, if you could kind of share with us where your community partnerships kind of make a difference.
Oh, absolutely. You know, as I stated, no single organization can solve challenges of this magnitude alone. What makes Lucas County strong is that the growing collaborations between our behavioral health providers, our aging services, schools, healthcare systems, first responders, recovery organizations, child serving organizations, community advocates. Many of these groups are in the same room together very often having these kind of conversations and collaborating because we know that there are multiple needs across systems that we can support each other on. You know, we work together effectively. And when we do that, we experience fewer gaps in the systems for families. So we all benefit when we do that collaboration. We also know that resilience is built through connection. One of my favorite saying is change comes within the context of relationships. If you think about any of relationship, any change that you've ever experienced in your own lives, it's usually connected to some other relationship. So how do we promote those trusted, supportive, consistent, trusted resources to help children and caregivers, you know, through and recover from their traumas? You know, it's also important to note that, you know, individuals that experience ACEs, not all individuals that have those adverse childhood events will go on to experience psychiatric situations. But we also know that a good portion of those folks do. So having those collaborations and connections are incredibly important in our community. And by the way, as tax-funded organizations, our benefactors, the Lucas County residents, expect us to coordinate and collaborate and to use our resources in a cost-effective manner. So as we, you know, develop programs and expand education and access from programs like the Kinship Navigator program, what we're doing here today, you know, it's incredibly important that families know how to access services and supports. And, you know, many caregivers feel alone, and it helps when we have these conversations and we can make these connections.
Yeah, it definitely reduces that sense of isolation that a lot of caregivers have. So for those kinship caregivers listening right now, Scott, what is your one message of encouragement and one action they can take today to make a difference?
So what I'd really like to say to the kinship caregivers is to know this: what you're doing matters tremendously. You know, you're changing the trajectory of your families. You're providing stability, safety, love, connection during what can arguably be some of the most difficult periods in a child's life. Even when feeling exhausted and imperfect, you know, your presence can have long, lifelong positive impacts in the child's development. So know that. Second, please don't try to carry this burden alone. One of the best actions caregivers can do is to simply make time to reach out when you need help, whether it's contacting the Kinship Navigator program, speaking with behavioral health provider, joining a support group, calling 988 during a crisis. Those connections matter, and support from systems matter. Healing happens within the context of relationships, what I've talked about already. And I think it's tremendously important to remember that recovery is possible for individuals, for families, and communities.
So true. If people have questions about the Mental Health and Recovery Service Board of Lucas County, how can they get in touch?
So I always point people to our website that's called lcmentallywell.com. There is a wealth of information and resources on that website. And then also, you know, if individuals are in need of support or in a crisis, they can dial 988. We also have a local number called our care line, which is 419-904-CARE, and that's run by ZEP Center.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you again for this important conversation and for the critical work you and all the partners in Lucas County are doing every day to help families heal. If you or someone you love is struggling with mental health or substance use, please reach out to the Mental Health and Recovery Services Board of Lucas County or one of the many local providers supported through their network.
Remember, healing happens in connection and support is always within reach. Welcome to the Better and Longer podcast. In today's episode, we're featuring our new series, Roots of Resilience, Empowering Kinship Families Amid Opioid Recovery. This series is made possible by the One Ohio Recovery Foundation.